What's going on? Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. Pete Callender, your humble host at 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110. And of course, you can email Pete at the Pete Callender Show. You can get the podcast at WBT.com and Twitter and Facebook and Getter and MeWe and Locals and Parler and Gab. Now, I don't use a lot of those. I do have profiles set up, though. So, in case you're just looking to, you know, send me messages and never hear back, that's the you got a whole bunch of different platforms to do it. So, the winter storm warning remains in effect until 6 p.m. And there is some possibility of additional snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches, but that is mainly in the higher elevations along the Tennessee border. We got wind gusts as high as 50 miles an hour, according to the National Weather Service. Again, this is especially at the higher elevations and in locations near the Blue Ridge Escarpment. Tennessee border counties of North Carolina as well. This is all until 6 o'clock this evening. Those are for the western portions of the state. Hang on, I'm backing up here to the National Weather Service storm warning. This is the special weather statement, and this covers Mecklenburg County as well as, like, everywhere. Alexander, Buncombe, Burke, Cabarrus, Caldwell, Catawba, Cleveland, Davie, McDowell, Eastern, Polk, Gaston, Greater Burke, Greater Caldwell, Greater Rutherford, Henderson, Iredell, Lincoln, Macon, McDowell, Mecklenburg, Northern Jackson, Polk Mountains, Rowan, Rutherford Mountains, Southern Jackson, Transylvania County, and Union. Winter storm affected much of the region with ice, snow, and sleet. Roads became wet and slushy as temperatures warmed Sunday afternoon. A lot of the roads have become icy again in the morning today. Slick driving conditions persisting before temperatures rise above freezing. That's happening about now. Some melting is expected this afternoon. We're going to have a lot of sunshine, which is very helpful, but a lot of the secondary roads or roads that have a lot of tree cover on them, so they're shaded, they may remain treacherous throughout the day. Areas of ice will develop again tonight, and that's going to make hazardous driving conditions for tomorrow morning's commute as well. So just be aware of that. I know that it feels good right now. You got the sun shining, and I see a lot of melting that's occurring, so that's all good news, but it's going to refreeze tonight, so a heads up on that. Excuse me. Still battling the after effects of the COVID. Yeah, it's just a lot of like head stuff, you know, just the drainage and runny nose and that kind of stuff. It's annoying more than anything. Outages. There are about 1,600 outages right now being reported by Duke Energy in the Carolinas. That is about 38,000 customers. For the Charlotte area itself, it's actually very low. So about 69 customers affected by outages in Charlotte. You got about 1,000 west of Gastonia, up in the Lincolnton area, and Shelby. There's a couple dozen down there. There's a good chunk down in south of Lancaster and around Springdale area and Heath Springs as well as Tradesville. So south of the border in South Carolina is a decent size chunk of outages, about 3,000 down there. To our east, we've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 13,000 around Carthage and Pinehurst area. They got really hard hit. Well, I mean, Pinehurst, it is, yeah, I mean, pine trees, they just come down very, very easily. I have no idea. just where the ice goes, and it wrecks havoc, you know. So if you want to report an outage, by the way, call Duke Energy. Do not call 911. Call Duke Energy, 1-800-POWER-ON. That's 800-769-3766. All right. And stay warm and stay safe, everybody. All right, we got a bunch of different stuff to get to today. I do have some quotes that I'll go over throughout the program from Martin Luther King Jr. on this MLK Day. But I do have to admit, I am kind of amused at the reaction that people are having right now to Governor Glenn Youngkin. What did you think he ran on, folks? I'm seeing people on the Twitter machine, on social media, a lot of lefties who are just melting down like, this is not my Virginia. Okay, well, first off, correct. It's not your Virginia. There are other people that live in the state with you, which is something that I think a lot of people often forget. Really, a great microcosm is at the grocery store. You know, from the parking lot into the grocery store itself, there are a lot of people that seem surprised, startled even, when they encounter other people in their world. So, yeah, it's a big state. Virginia's a big state. There are a lot of people in it and a lot of people that don't agree with you. So just because, Northern Virginia dominates in a lot of the statewide elections doesn't mean that everybody in the state agrees with you. So Glenn Youngkin is now the governor, and he took over yesterday. And one of the things that he did several things. And this has folks on the left just beside themselves. News Talk 1110-99.3 WBT. So some breaking news here from Colin Campbell, from the formerly of the News and Observer, now of the Business North Carolina. Former Mecklenburg County Commissioner Trevor Fuller, a Democrat, filed paperwork last week for a run for North Carolina State Senate. He doesn't specify which district he's running in, because I guess that could change under the pending lawsuit, he says. So Trevor Fuller, former county commissioner, looking to make a run for state senate. I know on every year, Martin Luther King Day, it's kind of fashionable for people to comment and opine about what Martin Luther King would say about whatever today. Right? Like, if he was alive today, he would say this. And usually, I'm sure this is completely coincidental, it usually lines up very nicely with the person who is opining. It lines up very well with their opinions already, what they believe to be so. So I don't engage in that, because here's the thing. I don't know what Martin Luther King Jr. would say today. I don't. And here's the thing. You don't either. Nobody does. We have no idea. Clarence Henderson, for example, civil rights icon out of North Carolina, sat at the lunch counter up in Greensboro, right? So he doesn't sort of align with where a lot of people on the left think that he should. So I don't know what Martin Luther King Jr.'s views on anything today would be. I don't. But I can look at the stuff he said in the past, and I can try to take some lessons from them. For example, on nonviolence. Although I would point out that history.com cites this as the quest for peace and justice. He makes the case as to why economic inequality has to be addressed and included in any path towards peace, referring to poverty as one of the most urgent items on the agenda of modern life. See, so what would King say today, considering the relative wealth of America versus what it was in the 50s, right? He made this speech at a lecture in the auditorium of the University of Oslo after officially being awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, December 11th, 1964. He said, "I'm only too well aware of the human weaknesses and failures which exist. The doubts about the efficacy of nonviolence and the open advocacy of violence by some. But I am still convinced that nonviolence is both the most practically sound and morally excellent way to grapple with the age-old problem of racial injustice." So He was a believer in nonviolence at that time. Again, I don't know what causes and efforts and tactics he would support now, but I can read those words from then and take comfort in the belief that I agree with him when he said that. Nonviolence is the only, is the most practically sound and morally excellent way to grapple with the problem of racial injustice. You don't lose the moral authority or high ground. That's the thing. When you resort to violence, you do. So, all right, so we have Glenn Youngkin taking over in Virginia, the new Republican leadership in Virginia. Governor Youngkin, the Lieutenant Governor Winsom Sears, and the Attorney General Jason Mayores, I believe is how he pronounces it. This is what the Blaze referred to it as, went scorched earth upon entering office, which officially happened Saturday. Oh, sorry, I think I said yesterday. So Saturday, Youngkin signed a host of executive orders fulfilling key campaign promises, which, again, I don't know why this is a surprise to people. The guy literally ran on this stuff. Mayores, meanwhile, the attorney general, fired more than two dozen staffers in the attorney general's office. So here's what Youngkin did. He signed 9 executive orders and 2 executive directives to address public education, COVID restrictions, the climate, and the economy. He ended the use of divisive concepts like critical race theory in the public school system. He issued an order that empowers parents to decide whether their kids wear face masks at school. So parents get to decide. And for some reason, there are a lot of people out there that don't understand what this concept of parental choice means. It means that you, the parent, get to choose. I'm sorry, was that obvious? Yeah, well, I thought it would be too. But apparently a lot of people are not aware of this. If you want your kid to wear the mask, then you should make your kid wear the mask. It's very simple. You get to choose. It doesn't ban the use of masks. It says if you want to choose the mask, then you wear the mask. If you want to double up, double up. If you want to triple mask, you triple. You mask as hard as you want to. You put as many masks on your child as you want to make yourself and them feel safe. But if I don't want to do that, you can't make me do that, just like I can't make you not do it. See how that works? This is really at the core of libertarianism. This really is what it comes down to, right? Don't hurt people. Don't take their stuff. It's very simple. It's non-aggression. I'm not going to force you to do something against your will, and you should not force me to do something against my will. But here's the thing. Jordan Peterson talks about this, the psychologist guy or psychiatrist. I always get them confused which one is which. But he talks about this. The ability to say no to somebody and have that mean no, there is an implied threat there. There always is, you know? There always is. Because if I'm going to say, you can't do this to me, there has to be some or else, fill in the blank. And the ability for that to carry some sort of purchase, right? For that to carry weight, for that to be a believable threat of some kind. And usually what it comes down to is the threat of force. That's what government is, for example. So with the mandates and such, right? It's the threat of force to either take your money or your liberty. So I tend to reject those types of approaches towards people. So I try to persuade. Because that's what politics is about. Politics is the method by which we solve our problems. And if we abandon the rules and we abandon politics, that really just leaves one course of action. And I'm not cool with that. And neither was King, by the way. Not that I know what he would say today. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT, 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. The new Republican governor in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, signed a bunch of executive orders and directives this weekend upon getting sworn into office. And one of his orders empowers parents to decide whether their children wear face masks at school. And I'm just saying now that the Alexandria City Public Schools now put out a press release saying that it will continue to abide by the health and safety guidelines of the CDC and the Alexandria Health Department and continue to require all individuals to wear masks that cover the nose and mouth in schools, facilities, and buses. So they are defying the governor. The officials are making the mask requirements actually more strict, says Julie Gunlock. I'll tell you who she is in a minute. She says, no exemptions now for kids. They have to either wear the K95 masks all day or they have to double mask with at least one surgical mask. This is the new rules they're putting in Alexandria in response to Youngkin's executive order. Julie Gunlock reporting this. She is the director of IWN, which is the Independent Women's Network. She is also of she's the host of a podcast called Bespoke, and she is an author, contributor at National Review and The Federalist and Wall Street Journal and USA Today. So she's in Alexandria, so it's a pretty solid source there. What else? Another order initiates an investigation into the alleged wrongdoing by the Loudoun County School Board regarding sexual assaults there. And another order declares Virginia open for business. It orders two other orders address human trafficking and anti-Semitism. And another begins the process to withdraw from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. Okay, so that's what Governor Youngkin did on day one, as promised. And people are losing their minds. And now you're going to have a showdown with the school districts, at least Alexandria City schools, and there could be other school districts that defy the governor as well, which I'm not sure. Is that insurrection-y? Are we undermining democracy with that? It's hard for me sometimes to keep track of what exactly is the destruction of the democracy, the threat to the democracy, and what isn't. The Attorney General, the newly elected Attorney General, Jason Mayaris, he fired 30 staffers in the Attorney General's office. 17 attorneys, the rest staffers, said they would no longer have a job. That according to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. During the campaign, it was made clear that now Attorney General-elect Mayaris and Attorney General Herring have very different visions for the office, said a spokeswoman. We are restructuring the office, as every incoming attorney general has done in the past. So there's that. Meanwhile, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona, at the national level, solicited the letter from the National School Boards Association, which, by the way, is like right now circling the drain because of this whole saga about, hey, can you get the feds to, you know, label parents as domestic terrorists if they come down and speak at a school board meeting, like that whole thing? Yeah. The School Board Association, National School Boards Association, you got states and local jurisdictions, they're just dropping out of the organization, and it is not going well for the School Boards Association. And now we find out here that the education secretary solicited the letter from the association that compared protesting parents to domestic terrorists. Peter Hason at Fox News reports that the email exchange indicates Cardona was more involved with the letter's creation than previously known. Oh, and by the way, the kid that was, remember the suspect that attacked the student in the school bathroom at Loudoun County Schools that prompted the victim's dad to come down to the school board meeting and get arrested, that suspect just got put onto the sex offender registry, ordered. He's going to be on that registry now for the rest of his life. So that's who they were protecting, the school board. Let me jump over here to Paul. Sorry, Raul. Hello, Raul. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. Welcome. Hello. All right. Well, I mean, if that's all he was interested in, I mean, you can call back, Raul. I did not hang up on you. I'm not sure what happened there. But feel free to call back at 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110. President Biden's Department of Justice relied on that school board association letter that suggested using the Patriot Act against parents, and then the Department of Justice created its own memo to direct the FBI to mobilize their folks in support of that effort. So now it turns out that the October 5 email, the School Board Association Secretary Treasurer, Christy Sweat, recounted how the interim CEO of the School Board Association told the officers he was writing a letter to provide information to the White House based on, quote, a request by Secretary Cardona. That's where that came from. Oh, we got Raul back? Okay. Let me go over. Hello, Raul. How are you?
Hello.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, yes. I did not, just for the record, I did not hang up on you. I would never do that.
No. I know. Well, thank you. Thank you for giving me a chance to talk.
Sure.
Just a quick point of view here. While I agree with the point that you made, and I think that's very accurate in terms of parents having a choice and all of that, and I'm a big supporter of that. I do want to sort of, you know, get your view on a different perspective or the other side of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example. The reason for the mask and the reason for the vaccination and all of that is like because it affects someone else. If you go back to what the French president said, Macron, folks that who are not abiding to some of this, he almost equated them being unpatriotic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, somebody... And pardon my French here, but it's like somebody peeing in the pool. Mm-hmm. I want to pee in the pool. You want to pee in the pool. Let's do it. But mm-hmm. it eventually affects everyone else. And that's why the math. So I want to get your viewpoint. Where do we draw a line when it comes to individual rights and I do what I want to do and I don't care about anybody else? If it is affecting you,
so I noticed,
do you think it is my responsibility?
Yeah, I got your question. Raul, yeah, I got your question. Hang on, I got your question. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'll bring you back after the break if you want to continue. Because I would challenge you to find a more charitable understanding of the opponent's view rather than the way you framed it. Because I could play that as well. I can adopt the least charitable interpretation of your viewpoint and describe motive to you as well. I'm not going to do that, but I could. So just kind of contemplate that. I'll get to your question. I wrote it down. Basically, individual rights versus the good of the community, right? And that your assumption is that the vaccinations and the masks save other people's lives. That's really what you're asking me. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110. All right, so I asked Raul to hang on through the break because I wanted to be fair to him, and we were up against the break. So, Raul, are you still there? Raul? Hey.
Yes, sir. Yes,
oh, okay.
I'm here.
All right, good. Okay, just making sure. All right, so your question to me was essentially, shouldn't people wear masks and vaccinate in order to help other people? And you quoted for me the Macron comments about the patriotic duty for other people and such. So a couple things. Number one, there is a difference that I think we need to acknowledge here between vaccines and masks, right? Like those are different things. I do not lump them in together when trying to build ethical or scientific cases because they're different things altogether. Okay, so just that's my approach to this. There is a difference between vaccines and masks. When it comes to mandates, though, You would agree, I assume, that we are discussing how to balance costs and risks, correct? Would you agree with that? That's a fair sort of distillation of the core question. We're trying to balance cost and risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, what are the costs now of me not getting a vaccine? Which, by the way, full disclosure, I am vaccinated. Now, I also happen to have gotten COVID afterwards, right? I'm still recovering. So, what is the risk for me not to get the vaccine versus getting the vaccine?
Mm-hmm.
Then, what is the risk for you of me not getting the vaccine? And what we now, and what we're looking at now, especially like we've got the study that just came out of Scotland, where the people who have been double vaccinated, they're being admitted into hospitals more than the unvaccinated are. So the transmission is obviously not impacted by people's vaccination status. I can still spread it to you. You can still spread it to me. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So for the vaccination argument, the highly transmissible Omicron variant, it blows up the need for the mandate because the justification for a mandate, for a vaccination mandate, because you having the vaccine, me not having it, we both spread it to each other, then what we're really talking about is that it's going to be easier for me if I get Omicron. Right. It it's so essentially it's a therapeutic.
Can I make a quick point here, sir?
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree with you from the transmissibility perspective, and I think you definitely have a point there, and that's what I think CDC and everybody was saying, and it's not just the CDC here, but the equivalent organizations everywhere in the Western world. I think the medical sort of organizations were saying the same thing. What they were saying is, based on the research that they have, they found out even after you're vaccinated, the chances of you or someone else, when I say you, someone else, dying was significantly less.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of, you know, it was helping reduce the rush on the hospitals, on the whole medical infrastructure. And I'm not just talking about U.S., pretty much all over the world, right?
I understand that. So, okay, so now this is...
Japan to Australia to New Zealand.
I understand. This is the overwhelming the hospital argument. I understand. This is the flatten the curve argument, right? That's what you're relying on, which is fine. But that's a different argument now, because your initial argument was presented as a vaccination and mask mandate. These are required to protect other people from getting the virus. So now that I have addressed the fact that it's transmissible, so now we're going to shift away from that. So can we just agree then that the vaccination, my choice to get a vaccine, does not impact you, and you, your choice won't impact me in transmission? Do we agree there now?
No, not 100%. And if I can say that, and here's why: if I could transmit the disease, or if we can call it a disease, the virus over to you, and if you are vaccinated, then the chances of you suffering or anything adverse happening to you are significantly less.
That's my choice.
That makes me.
But that's my choice.
But
hang on, Raul. That's not transmissibility versus a therapeutic argument. They're two different arguments. I took the vaccine, and if I had to do it over, I would still take it because of precisely what you said. I made a risk assessment that if I got COVID, I'd be better served by having the vaccine. It would make the symptoms less severe. That's still my choice. That doesn't impact you. That has nothing to do with you.
Yeah, I agree. But isn't that the question? And that's just for some. Sorry, did I?
I can hear you.
You know what? I think there's a little bit of a lag. So my apologies. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's okay.
So, you know, for someone like me, help me reconcile this, sir. And I come from a family of medical professionals, and my close family has been working in hospitals, mm-hmm. just helping patients. And that's why I feel very passionate about this. Help me reconcile with this. I could be vaccinated or not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to transmit
the virus over to someone else. And that person may or may not be able to take it. Maybe he recovers and doesn't even feel the symptoms, or maybe that person dies. Mm-hmm. For me, that is devastating.
Okay.
Me, if something happens to me, I'm okay. I'm responsible for it, right?
I understand.
It's my right. I did what I did. But if I were to give the virus to you and mm-hmm. something adverse were to happen to you, I couldn't live with that.
Okay, so hang on. Raul, that was my argument. That was my argument 2 years ago. When COVID first hit, I made that precise argument. But that argument doesn't work any longer because now we know, especially with Omicron, it transmits regardless of the vaccination status. Some nations are seeing even more transmission among the vaccinated. So what you're talking about is the impact on somebody getting something that is transmissible. That's not your fault. It's not your fault. It is, if you need to blame somebody, blame China, okay? If you need to blame somebody, blame China for killing people. But it's not your fault. We have got to break this idea that because you got sick with a highly transmissible disease and somebody else gets sick, that that's your fault. It's not.